Permanent Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ecology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Permanent Footprint, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff. I'll be with you for the next hour, and we've got a great show for you tonight. Our regular Friday guest is with us, our science advisor, honorary science advisor. A lot of crazy stuff going on in the world today, as there has been all week, and probably... for the past 100 years, for that matter, but it seems to be ramping up a little bit more. They're working on feverishly taking our rights away, and at the same time, we're being confronted on all sides by these elements of mind control. In fact, that's what we're going to talk about a little bit tonight. We're going to talk about consciousness. We're going to talk about consciousness in a universal sense. Here we are, the 20th of June, if you're on the West Coast. Now on the East Coast, it's the 21st of June, and Central Time Zone, likewise. We are in the year 2008, and if you consider where we are, technologically speaking, what the government has, what many governments around the world have at their disposal for science, and what we are given is sort of like giving a dog a used bone. And yet many people are wrapped up in the consciousness of the material, or they are trapped in a thought form, an unending sort of thought form, which is an illusion bordering on a constant nightmare. And we're going to try to sort some of these things out tonight for the listening audience so that you can consider what role you are to play in where we are headed. And with that, I would like to introduce tonight's guest. As always, he is a scientist, still a scientist, an inventor, still an inventor, an author, also a lecturer and teacher, and a pretty funny guy, actually, my good friend Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. How are you doing tonight?
I'm hunky-dory.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. We got a lot of stuff to cover tonight, so you better be in good shape.
Yes. I thought I'd let you know. I got an email from a guy by the name of Pradeep in India, in Bangalore, India. And there's a technical school there in Bangalore. I did a little bit of research and found out that he goes to this technical school. I think he has a background in computers, some knowledge in computers anyway. And he also was involved in a sort of a production through the acting department at the school. And they did a play on the life of Nikola Tesla. And they stumbled across an interview that I did last year with Richard Surrett on a Canadian station in Toronto. And it was a show where I described Tesla's murder. Of course, they had Tesla passing away, sort of sitting in his armchair, sort of gazing out the window. A nice thought. And they stumbled across my interview where I described how Otto Skorzeny and Reinhard Galen were actually the murderers of Tesla. And it was at that time that his technology was stolen, as you well know, and probably throughout his career as well. And let's not forget his money. And they have become fans now of Evident Footprints and my website. So... I wanted to give a shout out to those guys, but to let you know that there are people in India that are probably going to hear this show, and they're going to be turned on by the fact that you are quite awake yourself, much like Tesla was. And so I thought I'd at least start us out on that note.
Well, Well, that's kind of interesting. I'm very glad that the great nation of India is interested in the work of Tesla. And conversely, Tesla was very interested in India. As a matter of fact, he had translations of some of the most ancient scripts from India, including the Mahabharata and some of the other ancient epics. And he was very much interested in the technology that is mentioned in those ancient writings. So whether he could read it himself or not, I don't know, but he definitely had an interest. And so it's interesting how things come full circle, isn't it, Don?
Mm-hmm. I understand that he had a relationship with Swami Vivekananda also.
I heard that there was a relationship with a particular Swami, but I personally don't know too much about that end of it. There are so many things that that guy was into. It would really be quite a challenge to track it all down, especially when you consider that so much of his personal records have disappeared over the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be interesting what actually over there in India, what records might be lying around that someone may have left behind.
Well, I've heard that there's an abundance of stuff in the Tesla Museum in Belgrade, Yugoslavia. The problem is not everybody's allowed in there, and I know two people that went out of their way to go in there and study Tesla's journals, which apparently you're allowed to do as long as you're in there with an armed guard. The biggest problem they had was reading it, because Tesla had an incredibly pathetic scrawl, I guess would be a decent way of putting it. I know one guy who spent 3 months just learning to decipher the basic letters so that he could read the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like any other thing, you know, when you're on the path towards the horizon of truth, expect it to be a rough road.
Yes. Well, we know that. I know you wanted to talk about consciousness, and we've had a few shows this week where we've actually discussed universal consciousness and the consciousness on this planet, if it can be measured. And you know, I'd like you to pick up the topic and let's see where it goes.
Well, as you may recall, that was actually an outgrowth from what we had ended the previous show with, talking about the fact that we had really better take charge of our own lives and get this planet straightened out before the planet itself decides to take matters into its own hands.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for some people that may sound like a really hilarious remark, but you have to understand that we started off talking about India. There's a perfect example. The ancient writings from India talk about the fact that everything has a level of consciousness. Not only human beings, but plants and animals and even the world we live on. So, assuming that that's true, what we started off talking about was if the planet decided that it was time for a shakeup, just how would that happen and what would be the mechanisms involved? And how does that relate to a planetary consciousness, and how does that also relate to our own consciousness? So it's actually a kind of a broad series of things that have to be touched upon, but I think we can fit most of it in, Don, if you really want to pursue that.
Sure, why not? Let's go for it.
Well, okay. The first thing that I think we need to outline, then, is we sort of want to do a refresher course on what is the geometry of our planet. And this is important because it leads up to an understanding of all these other things that we have just outlined. And, of course, for those who have studied terrestrial geometry, for lack of a better term, we all know that the planet is a spheroid. It is not a sphere. And that means it is, it is an oblique sphere which bulges at the equator. And that turns out to be an extremely important ingredient in all of this. The other thing which is very important to remember is that the planet, the axis of rotation of the planet is tipped at 23.5 degrees with respect to the ecliptic. And that, too, is a very important thing because it means that even though the actual axis of rotation of the planet is defined in a fairly normal way, the combined rotation of the planet along with the wobble of the poles produces a circular pattern, which describes a huge circle both at the north and south poles. And that's also very important to see the connection of. This this huge circle, of course, is not a physical thing. It's just a part of the movement of the planet in space. But once you put these huge ice caps on top of it, then it becomes a very significant player in this whole thing because the mass of the ice needs to be taken into consideration. And then, of course, you've got the more traditional aspects of the planetary composition, and that would be the crust, which is a relatively thin veneer, about 200 miles thick, and the mantle, which comes after the crust and is usually defined as a heated region of semi-plastic composition, so the stone there is partially molten. And then, of course, you've got the core of the planet, which is often defined as a liquid iron center. I'm not saying I agree with all the details, but for the sake of sticking with the classical presentation of what the Earth is like, I think that will suffice. And then the next thing that we want to touch on in this preamble here is how these ingredients interact in a very peculiar way, because in order to understand this whole business of the planet itself taking matters into its own hands, so to speak, and of course that's a symbolism to a certain extent. It's important to realize that there's a great deal of evidence existing that there is a reset cycle of some sort which essentially comes into play when things get really nasty and basically wipes the Earth clean so that things can start over. And this has happened according to the ancient Mayan and Inca writings. This has happened at least six times previously, and it's based on a very interesting cycle. And I'll just describe it quickly because if we spend too much time on it, I won't reach the goal of getting to the consciousness issue. But essentially, we have these huge polar ice caps, which are accumulating at the polar regions. And because of the fact that the Earth is tilted at 23.5 degrees, and there is a wobble, or a nutation as it's called, in combination with the normal rotation of the planet, once these ice fields accumulate to a certain mass, what happens is that the planet literally, the skin of the planet literally twists 90 degrees. And the ice caps wind up at the equator where they melt, and the seas rise some 300-400 feet when this happens. And also during the time that the ice caps are in transit from their present location to the new location, all hell breaks loose on this planet. Yet winds in the neighborhood of 1,500 miles an hour, You've got waves 5 and 6 miles high as the oceans themselves are displaced from their beds and rush over the lands trying to find a new low spot of equilibrium. But the worst effects come from the planetary bulge, which I mentioned earlier, because momentum is not going to change. The momentum of the angular momentum of the planet must remain fixed in space. So if you can picture the outer skin of the planet sliding, as it slides through the bulge, it will deform in an incredible manner. And the amount of damage that will be done by that is beyond imagination. But to give you some examples, there's a great deal of proof, for instance, that Tiwanaku, for instance, which is a pre-Incan city that was built in South America, there's a great deal of proof that that was actually a seaport by its construction, by the type of buildings that are there, by the slips for ships and things of that sort. And now it's 14,000 feet in the Andes. So things can change, and they can change very, very quickly. Now, people might say, well, you know, some of these are pretty horrendous remarks. Where's the proof of all of this? Well, actually, they have discovered a lot of proof, and it's in a variety of different types. Perhaps one of the most compelling is the fact that when you have ice caps form on the surface of the planet, and let's say they sit there for somewhere like 10,000 years and accumulate quadrillions of tons of ice, the landmass beneath the poles deforms and produces a basin. And when these polar shifts occur, these basins move with the ice, of course. And then as they melt out of there, these basins are left in the new positions, and as a new ice cap forms at the polar region, new basins are formed. And there's actually been many of these basins already discovered and plotted. And a guy by the name of Charles Hopgood wrote a book called The Wandering Poles, in which he actually kept track of all of the basins that have been discovered. And it's pretty evident that the Earth does this periodically, and we're forced to start over with whomever is left after this mass rearrangement is finished settling. And, of course, with this, the animals also undergo, a big change. The mass extinctions are related to this in a big way. You have, for instance, everybody's heard of the frozen mammoths that are found in the north, and it's always assumed that they are animals that were living in the north. But examination of the food content in their stomach demonstrates the fact that they are essentially eating plains grass, and that type of grass is not indigenous to areas like Siberia where they have been found. And so obviously the shifting skin of the planet forced these critters into sub-zero temperatures almost instantaneously, which is why that they are all found frozen, some of them even in standing position, with daisies in their mouth and their stomach full of grass and what have you. And another thing that's interesting about this this type of polar shift is the fact that the Eskimos have been digging up wood and using it for years. And they refer to it as Adam's wood. And it's been found in Siberia and parts of Alaska and places of that sort, buried in the muck of the tundra. And it's composed of trees that are definitely from the temperate areas of the planet and never would grow in those Siberian locations. And it's important, too, to realize that the amount of animals that have been found in mass graves, like, for instance, some mass graves of mastodons and mammoths alone, you find something like 900 to 1,000 individuals. And then with them, either together or separately, are huge quantities of bones from horses, camels, sheep, deer, elephants, buffaloes, most of which are cud-chewing animals. And so we have to realize that these masses of animal life, which are not carnivorous but herbivorous, would have to be eating large amounts of vegetation in order to survive. So it's very unlikely that the that these critters were indigenous to the polar regions where they were found. In fact, what happened, of course, was that the land is transported from a much milder climate area to the poles, and these poor beasts were destroyed in the process. Now, one of the things that's really interesting about this whole thing and ties in with the physical geometry of the planet is the fact, which I call the magnetic clutch effect. And I don't know if you're familiar, Don, but there's a type of magnetic clutch which makes use of magnetic particles suspended in lubricating oil. And it has really interesting properties because when you introduce a magnetic field, the whole thing seizes up like as if it was a solid piece. And as long as that field is in place, it behaves as if it was one piece of metal. As you begin to weaken the field, now the metal begins to deform and there's slippage until you finally kill the field altogether, and then the two pieces are free to move separately. And it's my contention that there is an area between the Earth's crust and the mantle, which is affected by the magnetic field of the planet, and which undergoes a very similar type of behavior. So that when the Earth's magnetic field is interrupted for any number of reasons, this linkage between the crust of the Earth and the mantle is weakened as the Earth's magnetic field weakens. And then the centrifugal force of the ice packs causes the skin of the planet to slip. And the proof of that is people think that the Earth's polarity, the magnetic field polarity, reverses. But I can tell you from personal experiments that I've done with very specially constructed magnets that the magnetic field is never a part of the magnet. It's actually a condition of space. And if it appears from the examination of the rocks that the magnetic field of the Earth has changed its direction, what's really happened, of course, is that in the time that the magnetic field was absent, the planet slipped and realigned its crust, and then when the field built back up again, it was obviously in the same place in space, but had a different orientation with respect to the rocks and the strata that it passed through. And it gives the illusion that the flux has changed its polarity. But the Earth's magnetic field is dependent upon the sun. And so it's very unlikely that it would actually switch polarity like an alternating current does. But now we get to the most important part, Don, and this is the area you wanted to elaborate on. And that is, what is the trigger for this kind of mechanism? How is it possible that the planet sits in a position of equilibrium, going through all of its complex motions in space, and allowing many thousands of years to pass so that the plant life and the water courses and the animals all find equilibrium and civilizations spring up? And then all of a sudden, something happens and causes old Mother Nature to wipe the slate clean. Well, you know, there's a lot of theories. One of them, of course, is that for some reason the Earth on its journey through space goes through a region that interferes with the magnetic field from the sun, and this causes the Earth to lose its field. And if that happens at a point in time when the ice packs are at a maximum, then that could initiate the slippage. Another theory is that meteorites, especially very sizable ones, might come whistling in from outer space at various times, and if they hit the Earth in just the right way, they could be the trigger that causes this activity to ensue. But I would like to introduce one other variable into this whole thing before we open this up to general discussion, and that is the work of a guy in New York back in the late 50s and early 60s by the name of Clave Baxter. And this guy was, he was doing experiments with, what do they call those machines that they use when they see if you're alive? Polygraphs. He was using polygraphs. He was actually a corrections officer that was working with polygraphs. And he decided to connect it to a plant to see if there was any response that could be picked up electronically. And he did some experiments which turned out to be true classics, Don. One of the things that he did was that he had a bunch of people file past two plants that were just, they were exactly the same, and they were just sitting there in their planters minding their own business. And then all of a sudden, one of the people that came by produced a pair of hedge cutters and proceeded to slash one of the two plants to pieces. And what was interesting, of course, was that the other plant produced signals which seemed to indicate it was in a state of horror and shock. And the polygraph went berserk, recording the sudden outburst of emotion from this plant. And then several months later, they filed another group of people past the remaining plant. And in that group was the person who had murdered the first plant. And when he reached the plant that was remaining, it gave the same panic-stricken response. And similar experiments were done with the murder of lobsters and brine shrimp. And all these things have effects on plants. And they can be recorded. And we know also that there are people that have green thumbs. They just have a way with plants. They give plants a lot of love and affection and care, and they produce beautiful fruits and flowers for these individuals. And there are people that have black thumbs, in a sense. Whatever they do to their plants, they always wind up dead. And so it brings one to the brink of a very interesting theory, and that is that if the consciousness of the people taking care of plants has an effect on the vegetable state, which is that pronounced that it can be measured, what about the attitudes, the spiritual development, the mental thoughts and feelings of the billions of souls that are upon the earth? Their consciousness has no bearing upon the planet upon which we all live. I find that hard to believe. Our planet is definitely a living, conscious thing, and it should be looked upon as such. It isn't just that you have a mountain over there and a lake over here, and there's a bunch of fish living in this river and bears in the woods. That's how people tend to look at things, but in reality, the way the divine mind looks at it, the entire construct is an interlocking series of entities which all lend support and interact with one another in such a way as to produce the overall effect of life as we know it and a balanced ecology. And so there is a consciousness there. And what my concern, Don, is that conditions on Earth are being forced into such a low state of existence by these greedy people that are controlling the money supply that they are forcing the rest of us into lowered states of consciousness and producing more crime, producing more hate, producing all kinds of dishonesty and everything else. And this in itself could be a trigger on a spiritual level or on an emotional level or perhaps in the mechanism of consciousness itself, which could trip the planetary trigger and start a recycle.
Well, Jim, I want to pick up this conversation. We have to take a short break here. I do want to continue this, so we're going to take a short pause. When we come back, let's get into this discussion. Folks, you're listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. Our special guest, Jim Murray, and I, Don Nikoloff, will be right back. Don't go away.
The Idaho Observer, a monthly 24-page newspaper in its ninth year of addressing issues that affect all freedom-loving Americans, is one of the few remaining newspapers courageous enough to print the truth. Concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you? Subscribe today. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues, The Idaho Observer prints what you need to know to be a fully informed American. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At hempusa.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At hempusa.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from hempusa.org.
With our second half of Evident Footprints here on BBS Radio and our special guest, Jim Murray. Jim, welcome back to the show. You were on a roll there, so I just let you go. You asked a rhetorical question. You asked a rhetorical question, what might be the other cause, and the thing that went through my mind instantly like a flash of lightning was consciousness, pure and simple consciousness. Or lack of. And I think we should talk to Al Gore to really find out what the real answer is. I'm being facetious, of course.
Not really.
I think he's still struggling with his internet identity. So, if I can say something about all of this wonderful information you're bringing forward. It leads one, first of all, to understand that the Earth is very much alive. In fact, you were talking about this magnetic suspension that the Earth's various layers are dependent upon, and it was going through my mind, is this petroleum he's talking about? Would that be the medium that the magnetic force might be moving through, and the fact that we take petroleum out of the Earth, which is probably a big faux pas, We are contributing to that lower state of consciousness, not to mention we're polluting the surface, we're polluting the atmosphere, and it's probably got some negative effect on near space, to say the least. And, I keep saying, we ought to begin our search for terrestrial intelligence before we start worrying about what's outside this realm. But I'm inclined to agree with you and even the scientific studies you were describing about the consciousness of plants. In fact, I would venture to guess that plant, the first plant may have been murdered by a politician. And just, it didn't even have to be the same politician coming through the line. It could have been another one. The consciousness of life, of all things that are created, is taken for granted. In fact, the consciousness of human beings is taken for granted. And yes, the majority, the masses have been dumbed down, but that's got to change. These madmen, these psychopaths that are running this planet right now are literally running it to hell. Forget about into the ground, because that's been done a long time ago. And I feel you're right about that. We could certainly discuss the various aspects of consciousness that affect the plant. Obviously, attacking nature itself, and it's not just a plant that you have to attack. Polluting the water, I'm sure, has the same effect, not to mention that every drop of water that gets polluted is not usable by any part of the planet. It certainly can't be drunk and sustain a healthy body. It can't keep plants alive. It can't keep animals that depend upon the water alive. The normal cycles of humidity and rainfall and evaporation and this interchange, this movement, this aliveness that we call life is altered forever until it takes over. So it wouldn't surprise me if the Earth was getting ready to clean house, and I would hope that would begin in Washington D.C. Any comments?
Well, I'm too busy enjoying what you said to have a really meaningful comment, but I certainly feel the same way. And the interesting thing about it, too, is while I was listening to your remarks, it also occurred to me that just like consciousness is taken for granted, actually, so is life. Life on this planet is so abundant that the miracle of it is often lost simply because it's ordinary, everyday stuff to see living things all around, But if we were to give careful consideration to the phenomenon of life, you would notice that every domain that in the three kingdoms, and actually there are four kingdoms, by the way, but in the three kingdoms that we recognize, all have different characteristics. Like, for instance, animal life usually is associated with creatures that can move on their own and procreate by union and walk around and be in different places, etc., etc. Plant life is more stationary and shows a much more direct relationship to the planet because of the root systems and whatnot that hold them there, and definitely defines a relationship between below the soil and above the soil type of thing. But if we were to be really observant, we would also have to extend a definition to life, a definition of life, to the third kingdom, which is the mineral kingdom. Because there is a form of life that occurs in the mineral kingdom, and it has to do with crystal structure, it has to do with grain orientation, it has to do with molecular bonding, it has to do with various things that happen in that particular domain. Now, we in the West are taught that these are just chemical reactions, these are just physical reactions, but in reality, it in that domain, it represents the way the life force manifests itself for the mineral world. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because it's about time that we stop being so prejudiced and so egotistical and think that the only intelligent life has to take the form of us boisterous human beings. The planet itself is a living entity, and we should start to regard it as such. And if you do, then it's not really that big of a step to say, well, if it's living, perhaps it has a consciousness. And of course it does. And the Indians, it's very interesting that all the so-called savages all know this. It's the civilized people that don't know it. If you go to the Aborigines, they will tell you that the Mother Earth gave birth to everything, and it's a living thing. In Africa, the more primitive tribes that haven't been civilized yet will tell you very similar things. The Eskimos will tell you that. And, of course, the Native American Indians, God bless them, before they were all slaughtered, they had a very similar way of looking at things. Of course, they're all wrong. I realize that. You know, the modern teaching is that we live on a big clump of rock that just happens to be conveniently placed here for us. But it might be a nice idea to take their point of view into consideration. And then, of course, with that goes the realization that consciousness might also be possessed by the planet. Now, Don, you've commented on this in previous shows, and I'm going to ask you to interject here for me, but just tell me, have you noticed that, let's say in the last 20 or 30 years, any difference in the weather patterns, the number of earthquakes, the number of tsunamis, the number of volcanic activities, and all these other things, or is it just me?
Well, I can say if I go back 50 years, I can tell you that I notice a big difference. Okay, now one could argue, well, the Earth goes through cycles of weather, but if I went back 30 days, I see a drastic difference. I mean, we've had hundreds of tornadoes, we've had thousands of earthquakes. Some are being created by special manipulation of technology, both here on the Earth. HARP has a lot to do with it. I'm sure they created Tesla's earthquake machine, and they're using that. We've got nuclear explosions going off in the sea and underground, causing tsunamis, and they're shooting pulse beam weapons, if you want to call them those, particle beam weapons from space, and they're doing this all over the planet. It's not just what you see on CNN that's happening to this planet. And of course, there's always this word of wisdom that comes from the mainstream media, because they're feeding the propaganda to them ahead of all this. We predict this is going to be the worst tornado season of all time. Where do they get this information? They can't even tell you accurately if it's going to rain tomorrow or not. And yet they're making these predictions. Well, somebody is feeding that information to them, so obviously they're doing it. Okay? And that is lowering the quality of consciousness, because it's dishonoring the Earth. It's playing God. And I would go so far also to comment on what you said about the so-called primitive people who are chided in history books and in classrooms, in science, and all throughout anyone's schooling, is to say these people are backwards and they don't know anything. They're primitive because they don't wear clothes, or they don't drive a sports car, or live in a house that has 5,000 or 6,000 square feet of air conditioning and remote control buttons. You've got ancient science in China and India, And somehow our science here in the United States is better when we're the ones going around the world murdering millions of people, causing all of this travesty, all of this imbalance in the nature, not just on the planet, but off the planet. And it seems to me that we seem somehow to forget that the Earth is part of the universe. And because it is part of the universe, and I don't care if you want to say the Eastern culture, the Eastern continents of the universe versus the Western continents, or Northern Hemisphere versus Southern Hemisphere, the planet is in the universe and is therefore subject to universal law, period. And there's no man that can usurp that law or the handiwork of the Creator and say, well, it's going to be this way. Because that's the path of destruction right there. That should be the first one to go when this place is dealt with one way or another, whether it's God himself that comes down here to do it, or he sends angels to do it, or prophets, or if it's the Earth. If he just pushes a button and gives the Earth the permission to wipe the slate clean. I don't know if I answered your question, but that's my take on what we're doing to the planet and how it's treated.
Well, and I agree with you, but the point that I was trying to get to is that even if a small percentage of these disturbances are man-made, like as you pointed out, with weapons like HAARP and some of these other contraptions that they like to play with, the majority of people will agree that the climate on this planet and the weather patterns are vastly different in our present time than they were as recently as the 1950s.
Yes.
And my point is, like Al Gore says, it could be a natural. It could be man-made, it could be natural, you know, we just need to pay attention to it. But the real question is, you know, is the planet getting angry? You know, is this the result of our doing and how the planet reacts to it? Just like chopping up the one plant disturbed the other plant. Just like throwing brine shrimp into boiling water caused the reaction on the polygraph that was connected to the plant. Maybe we should connect a polygraph to the Earth and see what she has to say with all the murders and the bombings and God only knows what's going on out there. This stuff has to affect the gestalt. It has to affect the entire sphere upon which we live.
Yes. Now, I could have answered your question, Jim, I could have answered your question with a simple yes. But I chose not to because, you know, these are, I'm basically underscoring all the things you said. Is it that the Earth has to get angry, or is it just that the Earth can run out of patience and say, well, you know, they're not honoring me. I will just take care of business myself, like I always have. The Earth is not dependent upon us to do its thing.
Oh, definitely not.
Yes. She can take over. She can take over on her own. In fact, you know, I think there's sort of an honor system. You know, when this Earth was created and God put man on this Earth, he gave man the responsibility of taking care of it.
That's right.
And I don't recall him saying anything to at least I've not read anything in the Bible that Adam and Eve were instructed to begin turning their offspring into slaves. Quite the contrary.
Or to pollute the water and the air and the soil.
Sure, obviously. So. And everything has been shifted to this consciousness of the physical and the accumulation of wealth. But it's wealth for whom? It's greed, the accumulation of power, but it's all illusory. You know, I mean, none of it resonates with the frequency of this planet. None of it. Everything that's going on this planet, outside of anyone that's trying to promote love and a positive outcome to all this. Those that are in charge of the planet have run it straight on a path to hell and total destruction. And the planet is not so stupid that that will even take place. The planet can kick up a fury long before they push the buttons they need to push to give them permission to do it. Atlantis is a perfect example. Lemuria, Sumeria, all these ancient civilizations that existed and disappeared off the face of the planet had something to do with the fact that the Earth wasn't going to put up with it, and the Earth is still here.
Exactly. Well, it's good to know that we're on the same frequency with that. And what's interesting, of course, is, you know, if there is a natural cycle, the next thing to consider is, well, how long is it? And when was the last one? And without getting into a whole mess of complicated investigations, let me just say that it appears from the monuments that have been left by the ancients, like the Great Pyramid, the Sphinx, and various other things spread around the planet, that the last great cataclysm that did a lot of clearing around here was probably 10,500 years ago. And according to what's been written about Atlantis, there was more than one cataclysm that that actually destroyed the planet. But if we use the 10,500 years as a yardstick, the thing that's interesting about it is that's pretty close to half of a great year. I believe a great year is 26,000 years, and that's one precessional rotation of the Earth's axis. And the reason I bring that up, Don, is because according to the ancient writings, and most of the ones that survive today that are meaningful in their content are from India, it says that each world, and by world they mean epoch of time between the growth and destruction of civilizations, is approximately one great year if nothing happens to disturb it. And it's almost like saying that mankind is given the souls that come here are given a definite time period in which to evolve to the point where we can reach a higher octave of existence on this world. And if it's not accomplished in that great year time period, then old Mother Earth goes into her disappearing act and cleans the slate, and we start over again. And so if that's the case, you know, 10,500 years ago was some type of a cataclysm, and we're certainly on the threshold of something happening now.
Yes, what comes to mind is Genesis in the Bible. God spoke. Could it not be that this event merely takes God speaking a word and the whole process begins again? In other words, he can undo his handiwork if it's been defiled to the extent that it appears it has been down here. I don't necessarily see beauty in 110-story skyscrapers, and definitely how they bring them down, there's nothing beautiful about that when thousands of people are senselessly murdered. The psychic garbage that has to be clinging to this planet definitely has to have an impact on how much light strikes the surface. And really, it affects everything. It has to affect everything. And what little bit of consciousness is left is covered by the veil of all of that vile, perverse energy that's been created for what? For destructive purposes. There's nothing living in the things that they're doing. You know, there's nothing nurturing.
No, actually, it's anti-life. I mean, that's the trouble with these people. They have no souls, and so, you know, everything that they direct their energies towards are to the destruction of life and the elimination of happiness and the subjugation of man. And they delight in that, which is true perversion.
Yes.
And I just don't see how it's possible when you start adding up all of the karmic offenses just that I know about, starting with the elimination of species, starting with the attitude towards other human beings on the planet and the eradication of entire races, you know, the bona fide programs of genocide that were exercised by many governments, not just ours, and then the way they treat people in our modern times, what they've done to the food, what they've done to the air, to the water, you know, to the animal life.
Well, they're doing it to the plant life too. Yeah.
And, yeah, and the plant life. Well, your acid rain alone takes out how many tens of thousands of acres of forest, you know, which is part of the overall ecosystem of the earth. And all these things can be avoided, except for the fact that they're fueled by greed. So, I mean, if you might say that there's like a score being kept by some mechanism, we're not doing well. And I don't know how far it has to go before something drastic happens. But I can tell you this much: the ancient Egyptians had records that went back 17,000 years and covered the expanse of something like 421 ruling generations.
Mm-hmm.
And in that time period, they talked about the destruction of these continents like Atlantis and Lemuria and stuff like that, and the fact that they were, that their area was actually peopled by survivors from those devastations. And so, you know, unless you really want to challenge the ancient writings from every major country, we have to at least recognize the fact that periodically something happens that wipes the slate clean and winds up setting man back in his proper place. And
yes.
Who's to say how close we are right now? That's the thing that's so interesting. I mean, these people are going ahead full bore. The only thing they care about is total subjugation of humanity and the realization of a one globe, a one, what do they call it, a global government. And to get their way, they couldn't care less how many they murder, how much lying, stealing, cheating they do, and everything else. And I just can't believe this isn't having an effect. Now, you can see the effect that it's having on everyday people. I mean, just look at the ramifications of the oil situation and gasoline. You've got people right now that have to make a decision as to whether they fill their tanks in their car or whether they eat this week. So, I mean, when that gets just a little bit worse, don't you think there's going to be a huge spike in crimes? I mean, all of this is very predictable, you know, and just imagine what's going to be like when it really gets bad. So all this stuff has a great tendency to drive the consciousness of humanity down. And when it gets to a point that it does no good in the overall scheme of things, I believe we'll be eliminated.
Well, it's time to discuss a solution here before we run out of time. Seems to me the simple thing is for people to start waking up. And it begins with each one of us first of all, and we've discussed this on prior shows, not just you and I, Jim, but many other of my guests have discussed this issue of consciousness and how we have to take responsibility for having allowed things to get to where they are. We can we're in a culture where judgment has become part of organized crime. There is no accountability for what the government should be doing, and they are our servants, not our masters, but they have basically tipped the tables that they're daring us to challenge that fact now, because they feel, because of their armies and their weapons and their money and the havoc that they've wreaked historically throughout the planet for thousands of years, that all they have to do is keep doing that. But they fail to see the end of the tunnel, so to speak. Or it's like they're walking a plank, and they're totally oblivious to the fact that they're walking that plank. Now, if I take responsibility for allowing that to have happened, and the fact that I have this show and the fact that I write and I expose these things is my way of acknowledging that I'm taking responsibility. At least I'm putting a message out there. Now, there are those listening to the show that could take this information, and if you don't believe us, you could do some research, and you could find that the things that we're telling you are probably pretty true. At least, what are you doing to change it? If you're not happy with your life, if you're out of work, if you can't feed your family, obviously gasoline is making everybody poor. It's sending us all to the poorhouse, and people are going to have to make a decision pretty soon. Do I go buy gasoline so I can go to work to feed my family, or do I give up my house? Do I put that money into my house and starve and not go to work? It's going to boil down to people still chasing the almighty dollar, which is worthless right now, and you're still going to be in another situation. So you've got to wake up, and you've got to take responsibility and decide what gifts you have, what talents you have, what abilities you have, what smarts you have, what are you going to do about it? And you got to wake up, because you're not going to wake someone else up if you're asleep. That's a given. Now, from that point, enough people awaken to this, we can start putting minds together. But we have to recognize and fess up to the fact that we have allowed these things to happen. Have we created them specifically? Maybe not, but in the fact that we've done nothing to stop them now, we must, if we're going to survive. And if these people want to kill themselves and poison themselves to death, or choke on their stacks of money, let them do that. That's their prerogative. We can come up with another system of existence here. We can create it. That's the whole thing, is our creativity has been stifled or stolen from us. And our connection to the creation has been stolen from us. And all we have to do is recognize that and repent and turn back to God and acknowledge that. And we're on the path to light again. Because there's no future in this except for those that are running the show right now. And I don't remember giving them permission, and I don't think many people listening to the show remember that either. They're just taking what they've done historically. They're taking out of your mouth and out of your children's mouth the food that you would eat to stay alive. You can't find any clean water to drink anywhere. They have your money in their banks, and yet they're not keeping books. And to respond to what you said, Jim, about the records, Where's the accountability going to be? There is the Akashic record, or the Akashic record. This record is in stone in the universe. It's seen. Every act, every thought, every perverse deed has been recorded. And they'll have to pay for their deeds. We'll all have to pay for our deeds in our own way. No one is going to escape that. So they think because they can subsist without it right now that there's not going to be any retribution down the road. There will be. There's going to be a penalty to pay. Like you said, the karma that they've stacked up from themselves for themselves wouldn't take them to the ends of the universe. Or maybe it would take them to the ends of the universe. So I think, you know, I don't know if you agree with me on that, but the first thing, it starts with individual responsibility.
Oh, I do agree, and I think that maybe what we should do is put together a show that actually demonstrates what steps people can take. Because, unfortunately, you know, Americans are dumbed down to the point where they don't even know what their rights are. And if you don't know what your rights are, guess what? You don't have any. You can't let the government tell you what your rights are. We have God-given rights that aren't professed in some statutory law book someplace. They're innate in the nature of things, and there are definite steps that we can take. They're nonviolent. At least they start out to be nonviolent, but I mean, they're nonviolent and they're very positive. And you know, if people don't know what they are, maybe we should outline them, though. Maybe we should literally give a course in how you get out of this mess.
Well, that would be a good topic for next week's show.
Absolutely, and it would bring in a lot of stuff that's going on that give us a whole host of things to talk about because, you know, there are pockets of people that know what the story is and who are trying to do things. But guess what? It's the same old story that, you know, it takes large numbers of cooperative individuals to make change happen. As long as you have isolated little people that complain here and complain there and don't act in unison, these freaks that are running the show just roll right over you.
Yes.
And they know it. They're very aware of it.
Yeah, there is an aspect, too, because if you asked yourself the simple question, what human being could do this to other human beings? The answer probably would be one word, none. No human being could do this to other human beings. So then the question is, then what are they if they're not human beings?
That's a whole other thing.
Yes, but that's not something that we will evade on this show either. So we've got two topics for the next 2 weeks.
Well, I'm ready when you are.
Okay. Well, we're out of time, Jim. As usual, time flies when we're having fun, and this is a deep topic. And maybe I didn't answer your questions as directly as you would have hoped, but I did have some commentary to make about the things that you said in general. They bear repeating. They're worth repeating until the message sinks in. I know people are waking up. I get email from people that read my articles. I can look at the ticker numbers on my website and see that people are still reading things I've written a year and a half ago. They're waking up. They're not waking up as fast as would do them good, but they're waking up. And maybe we can precipitate that a little bit. We can help speed that up. Maybe we can figure out a way to connect one of your Dynaflux generators to a human consciousness.
Well, it might be an equivalent concept on a higher octave that would stimulate consciousness in that way. But barring that, you know, there's one little cliche that we shouldn't overlook because it does have a lot of impact, and that is that where there's life, there's hope. And so if people are waking up, even if they're doing it slowly, at least there's still hope that we can salvage what we started out with and what we have lost.
Yes. Well, Jim, it's been a great show, and I want to let you and the listeners know to be looking for installment number 2 of The Three Stooges Go to Washington. Lots more information coming out, and you can go to directlightproductions.com to read about that, or now that's coming out in The Observer. It'll be published this week, so I want to encourage people. Also, I want to encourage you to subscribe to the Idaho Observer as well. You can call them at 208-255-2307. Talk to Don or Ingrid. They'll sign you up. It's a monthly paper. It prints the truth. They bring out the truth. The truth is not heard on mainstream media. Ask Lou Dobbs. He'll tell you that. And with that, Jim, I want to say goodnight. It's been a great show, and we'll talk again next week.
All right, Don, thank you. I accept your invitation.
Okay, folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. Our guest tonight, our honorary science advisor, now becoming our spiritual advisor as well, Mr. Jim Murray. He'll be with us again next Friday. Tune in. Monday through Friday, as well as to the TNT Hour, which is airs Monday afternoons at 1 Pacific Time, hosted by Don Newsom, and on Wednesday, hosted by yours truly, same time. And I'll look forward to seeing everyone next week. Have a great weekend tonight. Have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.
Details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.